There were about a dozen at the dinner, and I didn't even notice him until the ladies had withdrawn, and Charterfield, our host, had invited me to regale the gentlemen with my adventures on the Slave Coast. He seemed to take an even closer interest in my story than the others. He was an unusually tall man, with the ugliest face you ever saw. Deep, dark eye sockets and a chin like a coffin, and a black cow's lick of hair smeared across his forehead. When he spoke, it was with the slow, deliberate drawl of the American back countryman. In fact, he was a junior congressman. Let me say at once that, in spite of all the trouble he caused me, I liked Abe Lincoln from the moment I first noticed him, leaning back in his chair with that hidden smile at the back of his eyes. Just why I liked him, I can't say. I suppose, in his way, he had the makings of as big a scoundrel as I am myself, but his appetites were different, and his talents infinitely greater. I can't think of him as a good man, yet as history measures these things, I suppose he did great good. Not that that excites my admiration unduly, nor do I put my liking down to the fact that he had a sardonic humour akin to my own. I think I liked him because, for some reason which God alone knows, he liked me. I remember only a few of his observations round that table. Once, when I was describing our fight with the Amazons, one of the company exclaimed, "You mean to say the women fight and torture and slay on behalf of their menfolk? There can be no other country in the world where this happens." And Lincoln, very droll, inquires of him, "Have you attended many political tea parties in Washington lately, sir?" When I spoke about spring, Charterfield expressed amazement and disgust that a man of such obvious parts should be so great a villain.
"Well now," says Lincoln, "why not? Some of the greatest villains in history have been educated men. A few years at college won't make a bad man virtuous. It will merely put the polish on his wickedness."
"Oh, come now," says Charterfield. "You must admit that virtue more often goes hand in hand with learning than with ignorance. You know very well that a nation's criminal class is invariably composed of those who lack the benefits of education."
"And being uneducated, they get caught," says Lincoln. "Your learned rascal usually goes undetected."
"Why, at this rate, you will equate learning with evil-doing," cries someone. "What must your view be of our leading justices and politicians? Are they not virtuous men?"
"Oh, virtuous enough," says Lincoln. "But what they would be like if they had been educated is another matter."
When I had finished my tale and had heard much congratulation and expressions of flattering astonishment, it was Lincoln who remarked that it must have been a taxing business to act my part among the slavers for so long. Had I not found it a great burden? I said it had been, but fortunately I was a good dissembler.
"You must be," says he, "and I speak as a politician who knows how difficult it is to fool people."
"Well," says I, "my own experience is that you can fool some people all the time, and all the people sometimes, but I concede that it's difficult to fool all the people all the time."
"That is so," says he, and that great grin lit up his ugly face. "Yes, sir, Mr. Comber, that is indeed so."
I also carried away from the table an impression of Mr. Lincoln's views on slaves and slavery, which must seem strange since it varies somewhat from popular belief. I recall, for example, that at one point he described the Negroes as
"the most confounded nuisance on this continent, not excepting the Democrats."
"Oh, come," says someone, "that is a little hard. It is not their fault."
"It was not my fault when I caught the chicken pox," says Lincoln. "But I can assure you that while I was infected, I was a most unconscionable nuisance, although I believe my family loved me as dearly as ever."
"Come, that's better," laughs the other. "You may call the Negroes a nuisance provided you love them, too. That will satisfy even the sternest abolitionist."
"Yes, I believe it would," says Lincoln.
and lack so many satisfactory political statements, it would not be true.
End of Disc 2.